Welcome to Mare's podcast series, Speaking of Changing Legal, where we discuss the leading trends and innovations that are reshaping the way legal work is done. Today's episode features Mare's Daniel Abramoff speaking with Roy Austin of Meta on his role in shaping Meta's commitment to civil rights and social responsibility. The views expressed in this podcast are the opinions of the people speaking and not necessarily that of the companies they work for.
Roy Austin Jr. serves as Meta's Deputy General Counsel and VP of Civil Rights, marking a groundbreaking role in the tech industry. His background as an attorney includes roles as partner at prestigious law firms and key positions within the U.S. Department of Justice and the White House. With a focus on criminal defense, civil rights litigation, and policy development, Roy brings a wealth of experience to his current position, shaping Meta's approach to civil rights issues in the digital age. In this interview, we delve into Roy's remarkable journey and his pivotal role in shaping Meta's commitment to civil rights and social responsibility. Thank you so much for joining us, Roy.
Dan, it's a real pleasure. Thank you for inviting me.
Absolutely. We often see lawyers go into civil rights for various reasons, whether it's because of their strong sense of social justice and belief in the fundamental equality of all people, or they might be driven by a desire to create a real and positive change in society. How did you become a civil rights attorney?
So Dan, again, thank you for having me here. Great question. Dan, for me, it was interesting. I grew up in State College, Pennsylvania, which was actually an amazing place to grow up because there couldn't be a safer place. I literally rode my bike all over town any hour of the night, and my parents didn't worry about me. My parents, I'm a first generation American. My parents were born on the island nation of St. Vincent and the Grenadines. They, despite being in State College, Pennsylvania, which was not a particularly diverse place, despite the safety, used to watch the news coming out of New York City every night. And the news would start every night with, it's 10 o'clock, do you know where your children are? And that would be followed by images of oftentimes young Black men being arrested, young Black men being killed, young Black men being in trouble in some way or another. And it wasn't my personal experience or what I saw. And for me, it became kind of, how can I make sure that more young Black men have the same experience? And so that, in combined with the fact that my dad was a criminologist, sociologist, dealing with issues of juvenile delinquency, that and the fact that my parents let me watch too much TV, and I watched a bunch of lawyer shows and saw stand-up lawyers and said, I want to be a litigator, a trial attorney. All of those things together are what led me in the direction of civil rights.
That's amazing. And I think it's very interesting and important to highlight the fact that, you know, you were, to your point, you had a pretty easy upbringing in the sense that you didn't have to deal with these traumas, but you were looking at this as, what can I do? What can I do to help? And I think that's such a powerful thing that certain people are able to take on. What were your parents' thoughts when you let them know that's what you want to do?
You know, it was actually kind of interesting because my parents, and maybe this is in part just the kind of immigrant mentality. They're like, can't you go into A, safer and B, more lucrative work? I think that's really where they saw this going. So I think over time they became quite proud of it. You know, when they heard about the stuff I was working on and you know, when I was ultimately it led me to work in the Obama White House, you know, there was pride there. At first, though, when I'm, you know, traveling around the country as a lawyer investigating and prosecuting hate crimes and police misconduct cases on a DOJ trial attorney salary, I think their first instinct was, okay, that sounds dangerous and you're not making a lot of money. So, but they certainly have expressed a great deal of pride in it now.
That's so interesting. I love that. You know, shifting to our next question here, it's not often we see a Fortune 100 company take a real stance on civil rights the way Meta has. How did you end up as the only VP of civil rights at a leading tech company?
Yeah, look, it's not only unusual, it remains unprecedented, which to me is unfortunate because I see the importance of this role. So Laura Murphy, who is very well known as an ACLU attorney here in Washington, D.C., and then a woman named Megan Casey, who was at a local civil rights law firm and is now doing civil rights work for a company. They conducted a multi-year audit, a two-year audit of Meta, and handed Meta a public document that said, here are the things you need to do to ensure that you are protecting civil rights as a company. And one of their recommendations was this creation of a high-level role for a civil rights leader within the company. And they were prescient in their decision to do this, I feel, because when you do these audits, I mean, the thing is you have all these things you have to accomplish. And for companies, you can basically create the list and you can go through it and you can say, okay, I've done this, I've done this, I've done this. And then, but with a company, especially a tech company that's moving so quickly, you are quickly onto new issues that were not even imagined. For example, you know, when it was created, there was no sense of the metaverse. When it was created, ChatGPT had not gone public in a way that made AI the thing that everyone is talking about. And so having someone who's actually in the building, in the room, day in and day out to see these issues, I think showed incredible foresight. And it's why I think, you know, every company should have a similar position. But yeah, it was really, this is Laura Murphy's idea. And I am fortunate enough to have the seat that she created.
That's amazing. And you're definitely pioneering the way. It sounds like there will likely be more folks like yourself in positions at larger corporations in the future, just based off of the various different things you all are working on at Meta, which leads me to my next question. What does the day-to-day look like for you as the Deputy General Counsel of Civil Rights at Meta, and what are some of the projects you're currently working on?
Yeah, so look, it is, you could just imagine being in a tech company in general, and that the day-to-day is different all the time, and things are moving that fast all the time. So for us, and it's really how I've organized the work is, again, there was no template for me to play off of. What I ended up doing is looking at kind of what I saw were the major moving pieces here at Meta, and wanted to have what I call a pillar lead. An associate deputy counsel over each of these pillars, more or less. And so, you know, what are the big civil rights issues that we deal with as a company? One is voting and civic engagement, voting being one of the fundamental civil rights that people marched on the street for. That's kind of what these pictures are behind me. So I have a voting and civic engagement lead. I have a lead on hate crimes and law enforcement. I have a lead on technology. I have a lead on policy, and then a lead on product. So I have basically five leads. And for me, day in and day out is what are they seeing? What is happening? And so on one day, the metaverse and avatars is cropping up and we have to figure that out. But another day, we have elections going on and we have to help and work across the company to figure out, like, how do we make sure that people aren't misled on time, place, manner of voting on our platforms. You know, another day, all of a sudden, we're releasing a new product. And it is like, does that product have an impact on civil rights? So really, we are moving all over the place. So my days are, you know, like everybody else, a lot of Zoom calls, but also a lot of reading and figuring out and trying to understand, what is the product that we are creating and what will it look like? What are the policies that are going to support that product? And how do we make sure that those are being looked at through a civil rights lens? So truly every single day is different. The learning curve remains incredibly steep. The work remains incredibly exciting. But again, it's the need and importance of having someone in the room who wakes up every single day thinking, what is the impact? What will be the impact of our product or our policy on our historically and systemically marginalized communities defined by it. And I've limited it a little bit to certain protected characteristics. So race, religion, national origin, ethnicity, gender, gender identity, sexual orientation, and disability.
Well, you're obviously in a position to make a massive impact on so many people. So I'm sure that that can never, that doesn't escape you easily. So that is very, very interesting. And I'm just curious to hear your thoughts. What does the future look like in your opinion in terms of civil rights in the commercial space, as well as just within society, and how much that will play a hand into sort of shaping the acceptance of how people view each other?
Look, it will always be an essential place. Unfortunately, people get treated differently, certainly feel they are treated differently based on those, their protected characteristics. And so civil rights will always be crucial. We're never going to forget that people identify themselves by their faith or identify themselves by their sexual orientation or are identified by those things. And so there will always be a need to ensure that we are treating everyone equitably and fairly and justly. And so, you know, the future is that this, these protections will always be necessary. Now, you know, let's not be Pollyanna-ish here and believe that, you know, there aren't certain headwinds that come and go. But, you know, as I remind my team every day, there are people who marched in the streets who died basically to give us the opportunities we have today. And they'd be kind of mad if we were whining that, you know, someone's trying to ban some books and someone else is trying to take away someone's voting rights. And that we thought that this, you know, that these headwinds were too stiff. The work will be there forever to be done. And it is my hope that you know, more companies get in front of it and say, you know what, we want people who have this expertise to be leading our efforts here, to be listening both to what is being said externally, what's happening internally, and what can we do to be better corporate citizens.
That's excellent. And I'd say just one last piece, that the expertise combined with the compassion to really understand, and to your point, using the history of what everyone has gone through and not forgetting that and bringing it into the future as a reminder of what to be grateful for, but also where what we should or should not be doing. I thank you so much, Roy. I appreciate you taking the time. I think that so many others out there will find this very valuable. And thank you for what you do.
Daniel, just look, thank you for the opportunity to talk about what I think is really important and exciting work. And thank you for what you do, bringing these messages to so many people. So I really appreciate you inviting me to be your guest today.
It's my pleasure. Thank you so much, Roy.